good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for February 3rd, 2013. Koya Kobose here. Glad you joined us this morning. Gee, all kind of things happen in life, or like my father used to say, when something unusual happens, he'd say, that's a long life, a lot of things happen. So we shouldn't be too surprised. And I think that's a very Buddhist attitude. Although we don't have to say Buddhist, you know. But this morning, kind of unusual thing happened. Never happened before. I was up, as usual, pretty early. And it's never a rush on any particular morning, or even on a Sunday morning, for Live Dharma Sunday, which for us is at 8 a.m. I get up from maybe 5:30, and have a leisurely breakfast, and read the paper, check email, things like that. And as usual, I lying down on the living room sofa and reading the paper. And this morning, no different than usual. And then all of a sudden, Adrian says, "Are you on?" And for a second there, I didn't know what she's talking about. I was just completely in the reading the newspaper world. And I looked in and said, "Well, it's 8 o'clock already." So I had to go to the computer and get onto Blog Talk and sign in and then dial in on the telephone and everything. And I had to chuckle to myself because sometimes you get spaced out. And that's the way it goes. Okay, I'm going to introduce our guest today for Dharma Glimpse, Jeff Wyo. Wyo is wise peace, and of course every Bright Dawn lay minister has the Yo for the second character in the Dharma name, which is for the sun. Like my Dharma name is Ko Yo. Ko means to face or turn toward the sun. And of course, the sun is like bright dawn. Every morning we face east to begin the morning. And as we stumble into the bathroom, I face east and put my hands together. Or sometimes just bow your head a little bit, and you greet the new day. His Dharma name means, is translated as peaceful sun. And he particularly liked that because he said during his college days, he was engaged in peace demonstration and things like this. So Jeff Wyo, he lives in Arkansas, where he says it's not just the Bible Belt, but it's the Bible Buckle. And so he is doing his Dharma work there. Well, Jeff Wyo Sensei.
Thank you for inviting me to speak today. In college, many years ago, I studied theater with an emphasis in stage performance. I think, like many young actors, my favorite piece to perform was Hamlet's To Be or Not to Be soliloquy. I was young, I was angry. Hamlet was young, Hamlet was angry. It seemed a natural fit. Last week, as I was watching Hamlet for the 11th millionth time, it seems, all those famous words took on some new meanings for me. Now, I look at it through the lens of the Dharma. As we all know, it starts off, to be or not to be. As Mr. Brahma spoke these famous words, the first thought in my head was, there's Hamlet's problem. He's stuck in dualistic thinking. He doesn't understand the oneness of all things. Next, the bard writes about suffering and outrageous fortune. But the Buddha teaches our suffering isn't at the hands of fortune, but it's kind of at our own control. It's our interpretation of the world. Next comes the part about shuffling off this mortal coil. In context of the play, it's referring to death, but through my lens of the Dharma, it made me think about severing attachments. We get so caught up in the manifest and the physical, we have a tendency to lose sight that we are more luminous beings at our center. Hamlet then lists some examples of how he has been wronged, and he plays with this idea of death again and what it means. And I'm generalizing here towards the end. I think we all know the finale of the tragedy called Hamlet. But the final words of this piece are, in thy orison be all my sins remembered. This made me think of Indra's net and how we are all a reflection of the infinite and how the infinite is a reflection of us. I don't know if the bard should be called a bodhisattva, but that day his words turned my mind to the Dharma, and that is the glimpse I wish to share with you. The Dharma is everywhere. We just need to open our eyes to see it. Even in words that are hundreds and hundreds of years old, in a silly little tragic play about a Danish prince. Anyway, thank you for listening.
Thank you. I'm just writing some notes down here. Ah, very interesting, very interesting. Indeed, the Dharma is everywhere. I didn't know this about Jeff Wilde's background in the dramatic arts there. I often use, sometimes I did quote the, when he mentioned to be or not to be, of course, you could look at that as kind of a dualistic sense also. But I remember reading, I was influenced in my college days by French existential philosophers like, Camus and Sartre. And Camus, I read a passage where he quoted, Shakespeare's famous line of to be or not to be. Now, what does that mean, to be or not to be? That is the question. Camus says, well, this means, is life worth living or not? Such a fundamental question. Is life worth living or not? It reminds me also of, I'm not very literate. I don't mean to be self-effacing saying this, but literature or the arts, I'm not that knowledgeable about it. Sort of culturally deprived, I guess. But certain things stand out for me, and I make them relevant just to me. And I remember reading, it was just quoted someplace in another context, but it quoted from a play by George Bernard Shaw, where he says there's two characters, and the lines that they're saying is, one of them says to the other, "Well, don't you feel at home in the world?" and the other person, and then there's a parenthesis. And I guess the parenthesis provides what is called the subtext or the underlying emotion. Okay. And it says, in the parenthesis it says, from the bottom of his being. And this other character says, no. Not feeling really at home in the world. I mean, something's off kilter here. Of being a human being, being alive. Not feeling at home. I think it's the same thing. It's how to be or not to be. Then I think it's the same thing as Thoreau, Henry David Thoreau's famous saying about most men lead lives of quiet desperation. Or the line, you know, these are very existential expressions about, well, in a way, we might say it's the whole purpose of being a human being. The whole purpose of being born is to say, hey, what does it mean to be alive? Is it worth it? What's life about? You know, or another way of saying it is that, well, what is the basis of happiness or contentment in life? And a very basic thing would be, he says, hey, it's worth living. Life is worth living. You know, the baby's birth cry comes into the world. Wow, here I am. Can we capitalize on that? Can we follow up on that? Can we shout out? Okay. Or do we just exist? Okay. My father sometimes talked about the difference between existing and living. And then there was the example of, oh, when I'm helping my wife wash the dinner dishes, I'm just existing. But when I'm golfing, I'm living, okay, or something like that. Okay. If we really understood, we said to be or not to be, and we choose to be, we embrace that, we make that life-affirming, not, I want to say assumption, but attitude, we would embrace the moment. You know, we would embrace being alive. And really, it doesn't matter about whether the moment is joyful or sorrowful. Okay. But is that moment supreme? I read this someplace too. I think it was from Robert Blight's works on the, you know, Japanese haiku poems and Zen classics, where he wrote, you know, supreme joy or supreme sorrow. How to live life. And it really doesn't matter too much whether it's joy or sorrow. It's the supremeness. That's the important thing. And there was a Dharma friend in Chicago that said, you know, because I talked about this as one of the Dalai Dharma talks. You know, the Dalai Dharma is a very short 1 to 2 minute talks, and we have a big library of these talks that we make available, 24/7 on the tape talks, and it's all computerized now. It's not on tapes anymore, but on the hard drives through a service called Ring Central. And every morning, part of my morning ritual is scheduling that day's Dalai Dharma, or sometimes it's called Sensa Says. And these talks from our talk library, maybe my father has several hundred that we did back in the 80s. And then I did some, and we alternate from my father's message and my message daily. And as part of the program, we just go down alphabetically and choose the next talk in the library, and so that the callers will have a new talk to hear if they will call in. And a lot of them call in. I know I've gotten feedback from them. They call in while they're commuting to work, things like this. Or I remember one person said, gave his feedback that he put the Dalai Lama's on the PA system at his, he was an investment broker, and he had a small office, and he would put this on every morning on the, so that all the his employees could hear it, you know. And he said, yeah, well, some of them, you know, one time said, hey, can we hear one of those messages this morning? You know, very rewarding. Okay. But I had talked about that supremeness, and this Dharma friend said, yeah, that's one of my favorite ones, you know. I guess the existential message is very human. You know, it deals with humanness, and it deals with meaning in life. And I think, again, I'm not really into existential philosophy. I could quote something that was a favorite quote that stood out for me, but I can't pretend to be, you know, I'm not a philosophy major about all the nuances of these things, but from my little, taking my own little gems from different aspects of it, I remember the existential philosopher said, when they asked about the meaning of life, well, there's no meaning inherent in life itself. You know, you don't look for meaning. So what is the meaning of life? Well, you got to go find it. I found it. No. See, there is no. Life is meaningless, if you want to put it that way. There's no inherent meaning in life. So therefore, you create it for you as an individual. You say, hey, there's nothing that telling me what the meaning of life is. I don't have to go searching for it. Okay. There's a neutrality there in a way, I guess you say, better than saying meaningless, but the canvas is blank. And so it's up to me. I got to take the responsibility, the empowerment of myself to what I'm going to paint on that life's blank canvas. Okay? So I have to find the meaning and make my life fully meaningful. Then I will say, yeah, it's to be. Okay? I don't want to live a life of quiet desperation, and you don't have to. And, of course, this means also you don't have to blame when things are not going your way. Sometimes that's easy to do. Okay. When you don't take self-responsibility, and the downside of that is that you feel hopeless, helpless, okay, knocked around like a cork on the surface of a wild ocean. All of these things are happening. Well, things do happen. You know, there's a broad context of karma, but there's individual karma too, individual actions. And one of the big ones is not what happens to us, but how we react or handle what happens to us. Okay? Because we cannot buck a lot of karmic conditions, okay? But the cause is how we react to these conditions of life that we find ourselves in or that happen to us. Okay? That's one of the key aspects of Buddhist philosophy. How we handle, well, you call it suffering, difficulties, afflictions, that's the whole secret, how to make use of suffering. How to handle difficulties. Or, as Camus, one of my favorite existential philosophers, like one of his favorite sayings of mine is, in the midst of winter, I discovered within myself an invincible summer. Okay. And this is why sometimes my father says, oh, black is white. Talk about non-dualism. Black means something dark, some tragedy. Well, yeah, but things depend upon person, place, and time. So something that very tragic happened to us is the source of some great spiritual growth and maturity in one's life. And it becomes the greatest thing, you know. Some difficulty growing up, or even my famous father's story in the Everyday Suttas about his friend who, community leader, who became blind as an adult. He was a very arrogant, he was a very community leader, very competent, and he kind of bossed his wife around, who was, you know, kind of meek, and thought he was better than all his friends, and he was in a relative world. But after he became blind and he became, you know, helpless, had to depend upon his wife, and now when his friends came over to visit, that's my friend, okay. And his inner eye opened, his spiritual eye, his wisdom's eye. It became a 180-degree difference. Okay. As he struggled through that darkness, he tried to commit suicide, took some pills, but he came out the other end. So black became white. And in fact, when some of his friends used to say, you became blind, that was too bad. He goes, no. That was the greatest thing that happened to me. I wish all my friends would become blind. Maybe rather extreme statement, but and that's why when I think of these kind of Buddhist philosophy of black is white, I think about the T-shirt or the poster in a recent cultural pop, we call it a pop a cultural thing, but it has a lot of grain of truth in it about the basic philosophies of the world's religions. And it's a takeoff from the bumper sticker, you know, shit happens. And and it says that for the Buddhist is when shit happens, it's not really shit. Okay. Being able to understand that from the compost, that's where the flower comes from. You see? Being able to see that. Interactions and the whole causes and conditions. Yeah, no outrageous misfortunes, eh? Well, indeed, Shakespeare. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, you keep going, and you have a very beautiful Super Bowl Sunday. Thank you.